Karamo is challenging the state's absentee voting. 2 weeks before Election Day, she sued to have Detroit residents go to vote in person or go to the city clerk's office to get an absentee ballot.
Oh, cool. How'd that work out for her, I wonder? We'll find out.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right.
You know what I
mean? I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and a whole bunch of other affiliates all around the nation and the world. No time to list them, though, today, because we got a big show straight ahead for you. Thank you for joining us for another thrilling edition of The Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Okay, first, a couple of days that we have been mired in Donald Trump crimes, you may be happy to know, Desi Doyen.
Yes.
That we will not be covering those Donald Trump crimes today.
Yay.
I think we could all use a few minutes respite.
Just a few.
We will also not be covering the horse race in which twice impeached Donald Trump, now charged with 71 criminal felony counts, with more almost certainly on the way, still plans to run for president again next year. So not on the horse race, but on the track conditions on which he and many others intend to run next year. For those who have ever followed horse racing, you know that the track conditions on which horses run is often determinative when it comes to which horse will actually win the race. And as we have been covering such track conditions for elections on this program and at bradblog.com for some 20 years, we will do so again today with a stunning report just unsealed by a federal judge just hours before we go to air today, warning, among other things, that a voting system used across an entire major battleground state has a major flaw that, quote, would allow an attacker to spread malware from a county's central election management system computer to every touchscreen voting system in that county.
Sounds serious.
Yeah, it is. Another vulnerability that would allow an attacker to simply place a USB drive into a slot to install malicious code that could then modify the election definition file that would change election results. Another to allow voters to print as many ballots as they might like. And those are just some of the vulnerabilities now detailed in this report that was so damning when it was originally submitted to the court by the plaintiff's expert in a lawsuit, long-running lawsuit, that the federal judge sealed the report even from the plaintiffs. They couldn't even read their own expert's report. That's how troubling the information was. Well, that report has now been unsealed by the federal judge in Georgia. And we will have a longtime cybersecurity and voting system expert from Georgia on with us to explain the report, the dangers that it highlights, what Georgia plans or does not plan to do about it before next year's critical presidential election, and what those flaws mean for the more than a dozen other states which also use those very same voting systems, if not in quite the same alarming way that the battleground of Georgia currently does. All of that, by the way, on the heels of the now infamous Coffee County, Georgia software breach by MAGA folks back in 2021, which we know that the Fulton County District Attorney Fonnie Willis is now probing. That breach of voting system software, after we originally broadcast that news about that breach last November, I believe it was, in which those MAGA folks breached and accessed these very systems and presumably already know the vulnerabilities that are documented by this report that was unsealed today and available to, those vulnerabilities have been available to anyone, really, who might have a reason to want to game the election results in Georgia next year. Not naming names, just saying. Anyway, that's coming up, and I'm pretty sure that once again we will be the first broadcast outlet to cover this alarming report. But just in case you have any actual questions about the interests of these folks on the right to game elections any way they can possibly figure out.
Yes, there's a huge incentive, obviously.
Huge incentive, and now, sadly, a huge industry to support these phony claims about elections. Well, anyway, they can, you know, even folks who are running for the highest offices in some of these states, like Secretary of State, the things that they will do to try to game elections. Well, if you forgot, here's a helpful news item from today from the Detroit News to help remind you of what we can look forward to next year. Actually, TPM's David Kurtz brought this to my attention, noting, quote, amid all the judicial sanctions being handed out for frivolous lawsuits over the 2020 election, what jumps out about this case is that the judge is sanctioning top Michigan GOP officials for a bogus lawsuit about the 2022 election. Way to distinguish yourself, quips Kurtz. Anyway, a Wayne County judge, Wayne County is Detroit, has imposed a $58,459 in sanctions on Michigan Republican Party chair Christina Caramo, as well as the state party's lawyer and others, because of a lawsuit that they filed last year that claimed without evidence there was wrongdoing and mischief in Detroit's election. In an order signed this week, Circuit Court Judge Timothy Kenny described the October 26 suit, in which Caramo was the lead plaintiff, as, quote, rife with speculation, an absence of facts, and a lack of understanding of Michigan election statutes and Detroit absentee ballot procedures. Now, to be fair, election statutes and balloting procedures are complicated matters, which not every candidate for public office can be expected to know inside and out. That said, at the time the frivolous lawsuit was filed, Caramo was the Republican nominee for Secretary of State in Michigan. That would be the top election official in the state.
Who had a complete and total lack of understanding of election procedures.
Apparently, at least if we believe the judge here and the suit that he is responding to, 2 weeks after the suit was filed before the 2022 election, Caramo was declared to have lost to incumbent Democratic Secretary of State in Michigan, Jocelyn Benson, by 14 percentage points. So it was not even close, apparently. Caramo, for her efforts, then failed up. After losing that race, she was elected to become the state GOP chair this past February. Mind you, Caramo has never held public office. She never held public office when she ran to become the state's top chief election official last year. She was a conspiracy theorist with a podcast who claimed to have seen some form of election fraud that she had no evidence for. So she ran for Secretary of State. She lost by a huge amount. She was awarded with becoming the top Republican official in the state of Michigan. The suit from Caramo and six other plaintiffs had asked the judge to require residents of Detroit, and apparently only residents of Detroit for some reason, to vote in person or to obtain their ballots in person at the clerk's office. That despite the fact that Michigan and its constitution provides rights to no excuse absentee voting in person or by mail. You don't have to show up in person to get your ballot, at least if you follow the Michigan constitution. Yes, even voters in Detroit, if you can imagine such a thing, are allowed the rights and freedoms of the Michigan Constitution.
And according to Michigan Republicans, that's a horror that must be stopped.
As Judge Kenny wrote in his order, quote, plaintiffs merely threw out the allegation of, quote, corruption in Detroit as the reason for disregarding the Michigan Constitution in the state's largest city. Kenny's order imposed the sanctions jointly on the plaintiffs and the two lawyers involved in the case, Daniel Hartman and Alexandria Taylor. Hartman is an attorney for the Michigan Republican Party. Taylor recently launched a campaign for the U.S. Senate. So, no, these are not nobody randos. They are actually top Republicans who abused the court system in hopes of gaming an election, and now they're being held accountable for it. Good. The suit cited the election conspiratorial film 2000 Mules, saying it showed unlawful activity through ballot drop boxes in Detroit. In fact, the film didn't provide proof of any wrongdoing in Michigan or, for that matter, anywhere else, even though the right-wing Trumpers who both saw the movie and the ones who didn't have been convinced that somehow this film did, how it showed some form of election, massive election fraud. But it didn't. But apparently these people are very easily convinced of anything, I guess. The judge said, quote, a blanket assertion of corruption didn't overturn the requirements of the Michigan Constitution. The legal position of those behind the suit was, quote, devoid of arguable legal merit. The original suit named Detroit City Clerk Janice Winfrey and the city's Board of Election Inspectors as defendants. Judge Kenney had retired right after making the decision in this case, but decided to come out of retirement to preside over Winfrey's request for sanctions in this lawsuit.
That would be a highly motivated judge, it sounds like.
Chris Thomas, Michigan's former elections director who has worked on Detroit's recent elections, called Judge Kenney's order appropriate, adding that this lawsuit was really just nonsense, noting that it nonetheless took the time of election officials and the court to resolve it. In addition to Karamo, the other plaintiffs in the lawsuit were a number of other Republican candidates and the nonprofit right wing calling itself Election Integrity Fund and Force. Of course, it is phony groups like that, Election Integrity Fund and Force. Groups like that, you know, when they are seeking, calling themselves election integrity advocates, when they are seeking the exact opposite of election integrity, groups like that that have made it very difficult for a long time. Actual election integrity advocates like myself, for example, to make the case about real election integrity concerns, because so many on the left are now just absolutely terrified of being accused of being one of those phony stop the steal Donald Trump MAGA wingnuts if they dare to present real concerns about our voting systems. Well, I can't speak for the rest of the EI community, the real one. But we here at the Brad Blog World News headquarters, we will not be cowed. We will plow away with exposing the same concerns that we always have with independently verifiable science to back up the case. That's precisely what the University of Michigan's Alex Halderman has been doing in his examination of horrible, vulnerable touchscreen voting systems made by Dominion and forced by Georgia's Republican Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger on every voter at every polling place across the state. That, even though the software on those very voting systems and election management servers were breached and copied and shared unlawfully across the internet by a bunch of MAGA folks in Coffee County, Georgia, just one day after the January 6th insurrection in D.C. But now, thanks to a report unsealed by a federal judge today, we all get to know what those MAGA folks likely already do. That full story and what you really need to worry about in 2024, as if there wasn't enough already, with Professor Rich DeMillo of Georgia Tech. That's next on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Buckle up. Hey, this is Brad. Here at the Bradcast and bradblog.com, we fight for election integrity all year around, like no other media outlet in the nation. But of course, we need your help to help us remain on your public airwaves and completely independent. Please help us continue that fight over your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate. And thanks. Welcome back. It's the Bradcast, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Well, I hope by now that longtime listeners to this program, in any event, are well familiar with the so-called Coffee County breach of sensitive voting system software in the battleground state of Georgia by Republican MAGA activists in the wake of the 2020 election. In fact, the breach of that system, which included the unlawful copying and then distribution of this sensitive voting system software, began on January 7th, 2021, the day after Donald Trump's insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. The matter is now believed likely to be a part of Fannie Willis's upcoming criminal conspiracy case against Donald Trump and friends to be unveiled later this summer. And it is also part of, as we've also reported in detail on this program, what has been found to be an apparent multi-state conspiracy overseen by Trump attorney Sidney Powell and hatched in the Oval Office itself with Donald Trump back in December of 2020 to essentially breach voting systems in not just Georgia, but other battleground states as well, beyond Georgia, like Michigan and Pennsylvania, even Colorado. That breach of Georgia's critical, sensitive, proprietary election software, a breach which copied and distributed that software in this rural, far-right-leaning Georgia county with the help of Republicans on the local election board there and on the Georgia State Republican Party, that was first discovered by frequent Bradcast guest Marilyn Marks, who received a phone call from one of the participants in that breach, from an Atlanta businessman by the name of Scott Hall, essentially confessing to the entire scheme. Marilyn, of course, was smart enough to record the call, parts of which were first aired on this program.
You know, I'm the guy that chartered the jet to go down to Coffee County to have them inspect all of those computers. I went down there, we scanned every freaking ballot. You know, the same people that went up to Michigan, okay, and did all that forensic stuff on the computers. And they sent their team down to Coffee County, Georgia, and they scanned all the equipment, imaged all the hard drives, and scanned every single ballot.
They imaged the hard drives?
Yes.
How in the world did you get permission to do that?
We basically had the entire elections committee there. Okay. And they said, we give you permission. Go for it.
And they went for it. And they breached that system and then continued to do so for the next several weeks. So there will be more on that matter, the Coffee County breach, from Fulton County District Attorney in Atlanta, Fannie Willis, as noted, but also from us here on the Bradcast in the days ahead as we've been digging deeper into that matter for which no one has yet to be held accountable, even as it lies at the center of what appears to be a cover-up by Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger. But, as noted, more on that hopefully in the days ahead. But the entire incident came to light as part of a long-running lawsuit in which Marilyn Marks and her watchdog organization, the Coalition for Good Governance, has been challenging Georgia's use of 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting systems. It's been going on for years, this lawsuit, and in 2019, the federal suit successfully resulted in the state's Diebold touchscreen voting systems that they had used for about 20 years being banned from any future use in the state after they were found to be unverifiable and unsecurable. But rather than replace those old systems with a new hand-marked paper ballot system that is actually verifiable, as cybersecurity and voting system experts had strongly advised Secretary Raffensperger, he chose instead to replace them with new touchscreen ballot marking devices, or BMDs, made by Dominion Voting Systems. Maryland's coalition then continued their federal lawsuit to challenge those new voting systems, which are forced on every voter at the polling place in every county across the critical battleground state by its Secretary of State, despite having many of the same security and verifiability flaws of Georgia's old banned touchscreen voting systems. An expert for the plaintiffs in that case, Dr. Alex Halderman of the University of Michigan, was allowed to examine the new Dominion touchscreen BMD systems and discovered security concerns said to have been so alarming that the federal judge in the case, U.S. District Judge Amy Totenberg, actually sealed his report, even from plaintiffs like Marilyn Marks. Eventually, the Federal Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA, which oversees the nation's critical infrastructure, including voting systems, was allowed to see Halderman's unsealed report. Well, unsealed to them, still sealed to us. CISA was so troubled by it that they issued an alarming advisory citing, quote, vulnerabilities that should be mitigated as soon as possible. This is just one reason that, as Marks told us on a recent broadcast, there were gasps in the courtroom during a recent hearing in the case, which is called the Curling case, when attorneys for the Secretary of State's office informed the judge that the CISA-recommended upgrades, while completed by Dominion, were just too complicated to even begin installing on Georgia's systems before the 2024 presidential election. That it would be 2025 before these critical security updates were undertaken on some 35,000 voting machines now used across the state of Georgia, and the more than 35,000 printers and scanners and election management system computers that are needed to work with them. But now, just hours before airtime today, according to a press release issued by the coalition this afternoon, the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Georgia has unsealed Professor J. Alex Halderman's security analysis of Georgia's ImageCast X ballot marking devices, a 96-page report that describes numerous security gaps affecting Dominion touchscreen voting equipment used in Georgia and other states. In fact, these systems are used in addition to Georgia, according to the database at verifiedvoting.org, in parts of 11 states or more, including Alaska, California, Colorado, Illinois, Kansas, Michigan, Nevada, Missouri, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Washington, and Wisconsin. And often they are used only in some of those states for disabled voters who may need an assistive device to vote. But it's only in Georgia that they are forced on every voter at every precinct across the entire state. According to a summary analysis of his own now unsealed report, the summary also released today, Halderman explains, quote, "We discovered vulnerabilities in nearly every part of the system. The most critical problem we found is a vulnerability that can be exploited to spread malware from a county's central election management system to every BMD touchscreen in that jurisdiction. This makes it possible to attack the BMDs, the touchscreens, at scale over a wide area without needing physical access to any of those machines." Well, that doesn't sound good. He goes on to add, quote, "Our report explains how attackers could exploit the flaws we found to change votes or potentially even affect election outcomes in Georgia." And the report describes ways that it can be done in such a way that it would be unlikely or even impossible to detect. The report, as the coalition explains, identifies system vulnerabilities that require prompt, effective mitigations, according to the Department of Homeland Security, prior to the 2024 election cycle. However, the Georgia Secretary of State's office has stated it will not adopt software updates to address the demonstrated security risks until at least 2025. The irrefutable scientific facts compel immediate action by Georgia officials to protect the 2024 elections, said Marilyn Marks, as quoted in the group's news release today, noting that Professor Halderman assessed the BMD system's susceptibility to cyber attacks and found and validated several major vulnerabilities resulting in the sealing of the report, at least until today. Delaying the security patches until 2025 is, quote, worse than doing nothing, warned Professor Halderman, since it puts would-be adversaries on notice that the state will conduct the presidential election with this particular version of software with known vulnerabilities, giving them nearly 18 months to prepare and deploy attacks. The security risks identified, the release continues, are further elevated by the fact that Georgia's voting system software was unlawfully copied and distributed by operatives associated with the Trump campaign. Partisan operatives have covertly shared copies of the software with an unknown number of individuals and entities. That would be a reference to the Coffee County breach. I should note that the coalition is quick to note here that the Halderman report does not allege nor support any claims of election fraud in the 2020 election. Richard DeMillo, Georgia Tech professor and founder of their School of Cybersecurity and Privacy, is quoted in the CGG press release noting, quote, I hope the Halderman report puts an end to Secretary Raffensperger's fairy tale that attacks are impossible because the machines are not connected to the Internet. It's especially ironic, he quips, that according to a recent Atlanta Journal-Constitution article, Governor Kemp, the former Secretary of State, who was a big proponent of the state's touchscreen voting systems, by the way, had to travel to Israel to see, quote, haunting examples of how easily a computer or smartphone can be hacked, even if they're not connected to the Internet. Joining us now to discuss this both troubling and, I think, good news in at least one sense is Professor Richard DeMillo of Georgia Tech, who previously served as Hewlett-Packard's chief technology officer and held a leadership position at the National Science Foundation, where research contributions include computer security, cryptography, software engineering. He is also served on several different boards for cybersecurity and privacy companies and organizations, including the Verified Voting Foundation. Professor DeMillo, welcome back, sir, to the broadcast.
Hi, Brad. Quite a story, huh?
Yeah, no kidding. And we haven't even started with you. So, as I say, both good and bad news here, I think. This report's finally available to the public and the plaintiffs, who weren't even allowed to see it. That's good, but it documents some pretty alarming stuff. In layman's terms, if that is possible, what do we learn now from Halderman's finally unsealed analysis?
So I think what we learn is that these voting machines are approximately like every other computer that we have in our daily lives. They don't work all the time. Mm-hmm. They're subject to being hacked. They get misconfigured easily. They get lost.
Mm-hmm.
They get stolen. Sometimes people use them for illegal activities. And all the assurances that we have from voting machine companies and secretaries of state about how well these machines are curated, vetted, and tested is what experts have known all along, just a bunch of crap.
Mm.
They are no more equipped to manage this kind of technology than the local dry cleaner would be. The only difference is that in a state like Georgia, there are 35,000 dry cleaners being managed by one organization with no chief security officer, no particular expertise in IT management, and this is kind of the predictable result.
And by the way, I would add that the dry cleaner's computer might even be more secure in that I read as part of Alex Halderman's report here that the sort of the main the election management system, the main brains of the system, has not been updated since 2015. Now, you know, I get upgrades to my Windows system about every damn week. These systems have not been updated since 2015.
The level of naivete I think involved in managing this technology is sort of mind-boggling. You're right. The run-of-the-mill consumer of computer technology reads the emails from Microsoft or Google or whoever, and dutifully updates and patches their system. Somehow, in the state of Georgia, the Secretary of State views every every precaution like that as a personal affront to his abilities, and just digs his heels in, refuses to do it.
What can you give us now that this report is public? Can you give us a kind of an idea of just some of the alarming attack vectors that Alex was able to find in a rather short time in examining these BMD systems?
Yeah, the kind of the headline here is that the things that you worry about, mm-hmm. and kind of embarrassingly, the things that the election deniers are setting their hair on fire about is pretty close to what the vulnerability is. With modest capabilities, mm-hmm. Someone who had resources could attack, in the case of Georgia, on a statewide basis, and install malware that would change votes. There are always ways to mitigate that. There are always ways to make that less likely. We kind of rely on the people deploying the technology to do those common sense things. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen in most states. It doesn't happen in the state of Georgia. So when you read Alex's report, when you read his blog post, and he talks about the ease with which you can install a piece of malware that would change votes at a certain time of day in a certain location, it is pretty close to the reality of the situation.
He describes the fact that these touchscreens do not, quote, appropriately limit what kinds of USB devices can be plugged in. It does not adequately prevent users from exiting the voting app. So if someone does get access to one of these voting machines, and of course everyone has access in Georgia to one of these voting machines, they could sort of stick a USB device in there, a jump drive, a thumb drive in there, and actually make changes to the system. But more troubling, if I'm understanding this correctly, is that you don't even need to go machine to machine. That one single well-placed insider can place malware onto the main system at the county, which would then be propagated to every voting machine on which votes could then be changed in an undetectable way in the entire county. Am I understanding that correctly?
That's exactly right. So what we do in cybersecurity is think about attack services, mm-hmm. on systems. So every place that a computer system is exposed to a potential attack, we call an attack surface, mm-hmm. And we enumerate these things. So we know for critical business applications what the attack surfaces are, and we know for voting machines, voting systems, what the critical attack surfaces are. And nearly every place that you look in Dominion's system, the attack surface has critical vulnerabilities that have been ignored. They could be mitigated. They could be fixed. They could be managed in a less risky way, but they're not. And so those attack surfaces are available to anyone with the resources to go after them. And the ones you worry about the most are the ones, exactly the ones that you were mentioning. The ones where the attack itself is scalable. So the machines that you're talking about in the county are called election management systems, mm-hmm. EMSs. Every voting machine that a voter interacts with in a precinct, you know, the touchscreen systems, mm-hmm. eventually gets its programming information from an election management system, mm-hmm. in the county or in the state headquarters. So if an attacker were to go after, let's say, the top level machines, the top level election management systems, mm-hmm. in the state of Georgia, in the Secretary of State's office, those attacks would eventually propagate to every touchscreen in the state.
And
it doesn't take any energy from that point on. The attacks have this kind of energy built into them.
Yeah.
So that it just keeps going from machine to machine.
And that machine, that election management system, isn't that the one, among others, but isn't that the sort of the main one that was part of the Coffee County breach that these MAGA folks, Sidney Powell, organized, the cyber ninja guy that we all know, for Doug Logan from Arizona,
right.
He was there for weeks. Isn't that what they were looking in, and that those folks now know very well and should know the vulnerabilities just about as well as Alex Halderman does at this point?
Yeah. It's a pretty bad breach. They had access. They had unfettered access apparently to the election management system in Coffee County. And by the way, we have letters from the new guy who took over mm-hmm. management of the Coffee County IT infrastructure that will absolutely curl your toenails.
Oh.
He talks about machines not being patched for years, being kept in warehouses where you can see sunlight filtering through rusted rusted doors and dust and dirt gathering on the equipment. This is not.
That's where the machine. That's where the machines are kept.
These were the machines were kept. You know, just getting access to the machines, depending on who the bad actor is, just kind of opens up doorways that each have a life of their own. If you marched a group of North Koreans into the Coffee County facility, they would come equipped with their own technology and their own tools and know how to attack these systems. Insiders who know all the passwords and know how to access the machines have their own axe to grind. They have access to the systems. Malware could be installed. Simply just publicizing the software is a mind-bogglingly stupid outcome. The fact that there are people out there that have access to these software systems now and can experiment with them means that there are thousands, maybe tens of thousands of people who have the ability to run the same kind of analysis that Alex Halderman did
yep.
in his lab at the University of Michigan.
Yep.
It disrupts what's called the kill chain, which
yep.
means that the most expensive part of a cybersecurity attack, the reconnaissance part where you try to understand the vulnerabilities,
mm-hmm.
has just been made mind-numbingly simple for an attacker. And those are the kinds of things that we worry about on a daily basis.
Yeah, we do. I'll include myself in that. I maybe they would have been more secure had they stored those systems next to the toilets at Mar-a-Lago. Rich DeMillo, if this report has been sealed now by the federal judge in this case for 2 years, I guess two-part question. A, why was it sealed in the first place? And B, why is it being unsealed now? Doesn't this make the systems even more vulnerable to manipulation now that Alex Halderman is telling everyone exactly how you can do it?
Yeah, so this is the natural question, and I think Judge Totenberg kind of had to work through this in her own mind to mm-hmm. understand how the industry works. Just announcing the vulnerability is not a particularly risky thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
What you do is you assume that whatever you know, your enemy knows.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know there's a vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
There's a principle in cybersecurity called Kirchhoff's principle, which says that you have to assume that your attacker also knows that. So by not publicizing it, what you're doing is telling the people who are using the system nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the attackers, you assume, know everything that you know.
Mm.
And so it actually decreases the security of the whole operation. Makes it less likely, by the way, that the vendors will correct the errors, since the vendor kind of gets a black check mark next to their name for putting out a software system that has that kind of flaw in it. But it's not an obvious thing, and so you have to keep repeating it that there's this process called responsible vulnerability disclosure, sometimes called cooperative vulnerability disclosure, in which the discoverer of a vulnerability first of all informs the vendor,
uh-huh.
gives them a chance to fix it. Reasonable time frame, 30 days, let's
mm-hmm.
say, and then at that point on, from that point on, you go public with the vulnerability, so the customers know about it, the end users know about it. They can make decisions to either check the vendor to make sure that they patched the flaw,
mm-hmm.
Or move to another vendor. When you keep it secret, you cut that part of the equation out, and you decrease transparency, you make it a more opaque opaque process and therefore more dangerous for everyone.
And my hope is that the release, the unsealing of this report, and it is certain portions of it are redacted, I guess the most dangerous part. But my hope is that the unsealing of this will, get enough notice to maybe put the Secretary of State in Georgia there where you are, on notice that something needs to be done here. Because, you know, is the breach of the Georgia voting system through the, the penetration and copying and destruction of software in Coffee County, is that alarming enough to simply prevent these systems from being used at all in the 2024 elections, whether in Georgia or anywhere else, particularly if they are not patched and upgraded as CISA, the Department of Homeland Security, has recommended? Dominion has already made the upgrades to the software. They just have not been installed yet. Should these systems be used if they are not upgraded? And should they be used even if they are upgraded, by the way?
Yeah, it's a great question. We were opposed to using these systems from the outset. And the only cybersecurity expert on the governor's panel that recommended the machines recommended against it. But for some reason, the Secretary of State's office in Georgia is tied emotionally to this idea of ballot marking devices. They're more expensive. Mm-hmm. They're more difficult to manage. Mm-hmm. You get your name in the newspaper a lot more if you're a Secretary of State, not for good reasons.
Right.
And nevertheless, they went ahead with it. You would think that saner minds would prevail and they would step back and say, well, why don't we move to a technology that we know is safer. We know how to manage the risk, that is hand-marked paper ballots, which, by the way, 70% of Americans use to cast their votes anyway.
Yep.
And that gives us a little breathing room to see exactly what's going on in those machines. I hope that that's an outcome. I don't have high hopes that they'll go in that direction.
And do you have any?
We try to keep the pressure on.
Yeah, well, do you have any sense of why Secretary Raffensperger is just, refusing to move to hand-mark paper ballots, knowing all that we know now, and frankly, why he didn't even do so in the first place after the court had found the old Diebold touchscreens to be so vulnerable and unverifiable as to be unconstitutional for use in any Georgia election? Do you have any sense of why he is so tied to these machines?
It's a bit of a mystery. The Secretary of State's office, Brad Raffensperger in particular, has been just desperate to find an academically respectable source for this decision. I mean, he keeps going out to colleges and universities and cybersecurity firms trying to find someone that will back his misconceptions about how computers work, and it always ends badly for him. That's why I was so intrigued with this article in the AJC about Governor Kemp going to Israel.
Yeah.
and seeing machines hacked by the very hack that we have been warning the Secretary of State about for the last 10 years,
and
the so-called air gap system.
And Kemp, he was a huge fan of the Diebold machines. Left office just as they were, as the federal judge said you can't use them anymore. Raffensperger comes in and replaces them with similar machines with many of the same problems that were in the first machines. Now, I should note that the voting system vendor here, Dominion, disputes the vulnerabilities that are cited in Holderman's report with their own report compiled by a group named MITRE, I guess, is how you say it.
And
the Coalition for Good Governance, Maryland's group, notes, quote, that report predictably downplays the severity of security flaws. They say that all of this can be mitigated essentially by preventing physical access to the systems. Is that true? Do I have that correct? Does MITRE have that correct?
That's what they say. I mean, this is an unsigned report from MITRE Corp. MITRE is a federally contracted think tank. It works for many agencies of the government, mm-hmm. and we have a lot of friends and colleagues that work there. It's a respectable place. This particular report came out from the election lab unsigned, and whoever wrote the report said right up front that they never looked at the system. They never analyzed the system.
Yeah.
All they did was take on blind faith the Secretary of State's assurances about how physically secure the systems were to make their conclusions. Well, I mean, what they said actually was that they agreed with CISA's analysis that these are actual vulnerabilities.
Uh-huh.
That are serious, and used the representations about how physically secure the systems are to downplay the likelihood that an attack could be mounted, which must be embarrassing to them because we have on videotape, you know, people just kind of walking in through an open door and doing whatever they want to these machines.
Yeah, in Coffee County. And by the way, why wouldn't, you know, a firm hired by, whether it's Dominion or the Secretary of State's office, why wouldn't they be given actual access to these systems about which they're supposed to be, writing a report about? I mean, Alex got access to study the machines. Why wouldn't Dominion or Raffensperger's experts get that same sort of access?
Well, if you look at the expert witness list for the Secretary of State's office in these lawsuits, it's pretty thin to non-existent. So they don't have a lot of experts giving them advice. The advice that every expert, every respectable expert, would give them is stuff that they reject out of hand. So they're kind of using their own sense of what's going on to try to figure out what to do. I will say, I mean, having been on the industry side of bad news before, I kind of understand how Dominion wound up in this circumstance. So they get a lot of bad press because of Fox News, because of Stop the Steal, because of bad news from Georgia, and they're desperate to find someone respectable to give them a pat on the back, and so it was Dominion that reached out evidently to MITRE.
Mm-hmm.
And asked them to do this assessment, not of Alex's report, of the feasibility of mounting the attacks. And
I don't know how you
I mean you can imagine how the conversation went. Well, how would we know that? And they would say, well, the Secretary of State will guarantee that the machines are physically secure, and someone at MITRE said, oh, okay, well, that sounds good to me.
Well, and of course, so good that they didn't sign it. I mean, I can't imagine, they didn't sign their own report, put their own name on it. I can't imagine how any respected, self-respecting computer scientist would say, well, sure, I'll do a report. I don't need to look at the actual machines about which I'm reporting. Very quickly, I got like three or four questions, Rich DeMillo, that I want to hit. I'm short on time, but how the hell did these systems get certified in the first place with all of these wildly troubling vulnerabilities? The U.S. Elections Assistance Commission, the EAC, is supposed to examine these machines before certifying them. Were they unable to find all of these flaws that Alex was able to find so easily?
Well, it's the problem with a voluntary compliance system. It's a moving target, exactly what it means to be certified. Is it the entire system? Is it just this one piece of the system? Do I really have to recertify it, even though I've made this small change? Do I use version one of the certification or version two of the certification? And there's always some kind of sob story about why you should go with the least restrictive way of doing the evaluation. EAC, despite the fact that it has quite a strong technical contingent on its advisory board, tends to go with the secretaries of state,
mm-hmm.
who are not big fans of election advocates like CGG.
Mm-hmm.
They're all affected by these lawsuits, and it creates an adversarial atmosphere that doesn't help that kind of interchange. Actually, the thing to do is to create a real strong independent agency of the federal government that has requirements and enforcement power, but I don't see that happening anytime soon.
No, I don't either. I've been reporting on the EAC for about 20 years now, and every time I report on them, it's problems exactly like this, where they miss things that are easily found. As soon as anyone who doesn't work at the EAC actually examines one of these systems. Can Americans, Rich, have confidence in the election results from Georgia next year if these systems remain in use without being upgraded, as Halderman and the Department of Homeland Security is strongly recommended? And for that matter, can we have confidence in the election results from Georgia even if the systems are upgraded versus a switch to simple, verifiable, hand-marked paper ballots?
Well, it's a complicated question, Brad. The question that people ask is, aren't you eroding trust in the election system? And the answer, of course, is that trust is not the issue. Mm-hmm. Trustworthiness is the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as there's an attempt to make these systems as trustworthy as possible, and to put as many layers of checks and double checks and audits and design constraints on the system, they will be more trustworthy than they would have otherwise been. I think it's a bad idea to just blindly trust the technology. As someone who's created this technology for the last 50 years or so, I can't think of a worse idea than that. And it's not a bad thing to question the people that are making the assertions. They should be able to give you evidence. They should be able to give you tests that have some teeth. They should be able to show you processes and measure the effectiveness of those processes. They should confront scientific evidence with scientific responses and work with the advocates to improve the system for all of us. I think that will happen. It's going to happen slowly. You can see that there are some jurisdictions where people are thinking this far ahead.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the case across the board, and it's obviously not the case in downtown Atlanta.
And it's disturbing because there are so many who might have once been concerned about these things. Now they confuse people like you, Rich, and me, and Marilyn Marks, and Halderman, and the coalition, and so forth, with the Stop the Steal people who are making, you know, baseless claims and or, you know, unlawfully breaching these voting systems. Whereas we're talking about not, you know, we're not making claims about that the elections have been stolen, but saying these are very real vulnerabilities that, you know, could be mitigated with, you know, a simple pen and paper to mark ballots. And I should underscore, you're the dean of computing at Georgia Institute of Technology. You founded the Georgia Tech Information Security Center, not exactly a Luddite yourself, warning people that pen and paper are verifiable to mark paper ballots. Last question. What about the use of these systems in other states? I mentioned, you know, a bunch of states, a lot of California counties out here apparently use the exact same system, though most are only for disabled voters who need an assistive voting device that and choose to use one rather than a mail-in ballot, or rather than like in Georgia where everyone's forced to use. But should we have confidence in the use of these systems now that they've been breached in Georgia, elsewhere in other states next year?
Well, if usage is restricted to ADA compliance, let's say, it reduces the attack surface. It makes the impact of any potential breach much less. Doesn't mean it's a good thing, but it's a very different situation than what you see in Georgia, where we have what are called universal use ballot marking devices. By far, the most ballots are cast on these universal use devices. Even though we still have a pretty liberal write-in ballot policy, it's been tightened up a lot in the last couple of years, but it's still pretty liberal. And you're allowed to cast absentee ballots, which is a hand-marked paper ballot.
Which is, of course, the best way to go if you are forced on election day at the polls to have to use one of these vulnerable systems, whether they've been patched or not, frankly. We will, of course, link to Alex's now unsealed report and much more information at bradblog.com on all of this. So, you know, you, unlike apparently Brad Raffensperger, Secretary of State of Georgia, you know, doesn't have to put your head in the sand. We'll let you know what's going on. Rich DiMillo is the founder of Georgia Tech's new School of Cybersecurity and Privacy at Georgia Tech, where he is a professor of computer programming. Rich, really appreciate you explaining all of this to us today. Oh, and by the way, you can follow him on the Twitters. I think he's still there at rad_ATL, rad_Atlanta, I guess. Richard, greatly appreciate you joining us today on the broadcast again, sir.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, sir. You know, I've been covering this stuff for years now. And every time these systems are examined by any legitimate independent expert, these kind of flaws are found. But apparently the folks at the EAC, the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission, just can't seem to find them when they certify these machines in the first place. This happens. This has been happening for 20 years since we have been covering these systems. You know, in fact, when I first got to know Alex Halderman, whose report was unsealed today, he's now one of the world's foremost experts in voting systems. He was actually a student at Princeton
at the time.
Remember?
Yes.
He worked on the first known lab hack of a touchscreen voting system. It was, in fact, one of the Diebold systems that were used in Georgia at the time. And we were able to obtain one of those systems and sort of smuggle it over to Princeton at the time, where he was a student. And, you know, they discovered that accessing just one of those touchscreen systems used in Georgia, the old Diebold systems, would allow someone to inject malware that could pass itself from machine to machine to overturn election results in a way that would be nearly impossible to notice. Sound familiar?
We're still fighting that same battle.
The same battle,
for
different machines,
integrity, yes.
Same problems. I mean, the more things change, the more they stay the same, I guess. I guess I need to do a better job. Anyway, all right, we got to get out. My thanks again to Rich DiMillo, to our producer, Desi Doyen. I forgot what you were. And to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can always download it anytime for free. Share it with friends at bradblog.com or download it from one of many podcast sites out there that the broadcast is now on. All of this made possible by those of you kind enough to donate at bradblog.com/donate to help keep us on your public airwaves telling these important stories. Drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the Facebooks, Twitters, and Mastodons, I am the Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to the Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.